And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Well, I love hearing my own voice. I don't care, TJ. You're going to have to be loud because I can't fucking.
What did you turn down?
He's just turning down everything.
All right, I'm doing this. This is good. Okay. Because I love hearing myself.
I like hearing myself too from a compressor.
This thing has.
Does this thing have samples?
We did put some on there. Yeah, but I think you got to switch the mode somehow.
Oh.
Yeah. And then go to.
Oh.
Oh, can you press the arrow one time? Switch it over to our bank. Yeah, there you go. Nice.
Now, get ready for weird news.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah, keep that one. Keep that one loaded.
Yeah.
keep that one loaded.
Keep that
for sure.
One locked and ready to go. Focus. Do not. Done. Dude. Yeah. Will you stay? Do you have like? Are you on a tight, super tight schedule?
No.
I am. So
well,
he is.
I'm going to kick you out of my house.
No, you don't, because I'm going to hang out and ask music questions afterwards.
He's really got to.
I have the bug.
He needs to get to bed.
He's got to go do shit.
If he doesn't get to bed by 6 o'clock, he's very, very bad.
It's true.
If he is one of those people that if he doesn't.
I need the crickets.
TJ is one of those people that like if he doesn't eat, it becomes upset.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, really?
I'm an anger.
Oh,
anger
yeah.
Guy.
Okay, I get that. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all of us, right?
No.
Blood sugar? No.
Morgan
no.
doesn't eat ever.
I eat, and I have to be the end of the day is when I can eat because if I eat, I feel like super bogged down.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I just feel disgusting. I feel opposite. I feel so bad in a different way all day.
Or just fueled on caffeine. All day.
Yeah, it just feels terrible.
Yeah. Like caffeine and vape, just like constantly. And then we'll go to like dinners and like lunch meetings and stuff. And he's just sitting there like.
Just not eating.
No.
For some reason it gets me going through the entire day.
I get bogged down sometimes, but I think it's also just like what I'm eating. If I'm eating bad, which I'm not saying you're eating bad, but.
Yeah.
I'm eating bad, like I'm taking a nap.
For sure.
Yeah.
I just can't do it. It makes me feel like I lose my fucking, I just have to have, this is what.
Lose
dude,
your
food
bowels.
Has the opposite. I like that. Food has the opposite effect.
Drains
look,
the
I'm
energy.
Fine
drains
is my the thing. Energy. I think it's, we've been lied to because I feel awesome. And all I do is this.
Dude,
and
vaping
that.
And ghost?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
They're going to make a vape ghost.
You should pitch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where when you're sucking in, it's just energy crystals.
It's good.
In the back of your throat.
When these things first came out, I was like, Why don't they just make healthy ones and put like vitamins in this?
I would love that. If it's Flintstones vitamins.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Smart idea.
Yeah, but also the government's going to be like, wait, hold on. That's going to make kids vape.
Yeah. And then they'll do the bad kind.
Yeah.
No, then
yeah.
They're going to go, how do we make money off of this?
Yeah, that's true.
Guys, we have a special guest co-host today. Please welcome to CD Burners, Mr. Dylan Francis. And...
That's fucked up, guys.
Today we're talking about...
I did that.
Today we're talking about Blink-182, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, a legendary pop punk album.
So good.
That was almost called The Diarrhea of Anne Frank.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff, a lot of Blink lore that I don't know, and they are my favorite band, but I would like, yeah, I don't know why I didn't. That's amazing.
I just saw that. I found that like 10 minutes ago.
That's incredible. It,
the other names were Diarrhea de Janeiro and Vasectomy, Vasecta You.
Dude, the diarrhea of Anne Frank is so funny.
It's so funny. It's so incredible, too, coming from Enema of the State into that.
Yeah. We put this together like on like a couple other episodes, but the largest like pop punk albums of all time are literally just like diarrhea related, like Enema of the State, Dookie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was recently looking at the cover of Dookie and how funny it is. It's just dogs throwing shit everywhere.
I was also thinking about this because I really think that cover got me into art.
Yeah. Same here. Because it was like, Where's Waldo, but not.
It was literally Where's Waldo.
So good. So good.
We told Nick, we're like, Do you know what this podcast is?
Yeah, somewhat. I like to go in not knowing though.
Yeah.
So we kind of take an album.
Uh-huh.
and we do the things that you can't just like Wikipedia.
Okay.
Which I think is fun.
I love that.
I think it's cool. It's talking like, and bringing somebody maybe who doesn't have anything to do with it, who's just a fan. Like
I'm a massive fan.
And that we're bringing in like their A&R or some bullshit where it's like, tell us the real shit. Tell us the real stories about what went on. And I think it has just been genuinely very fun to talk about these fucking albums.
Yeah.
But that's what this is.
I mean, I've seen a bunch of the other clips of like the Panic one. Of how they were like, yeah, if 1,000 people listen to this album, yeah. like we're stoked. Yeah. And then it ended up being like the most monumental shift in
absolutely
in music.
Yeah. Matt Squire came on and just so spilled the tea. It was awesome. Yeah.
We didn't have to say shit.
He was just going.
Matt was wild.
Wish I could spill the tea on Take My Pants Off and Jacket.
Yeah.
But
we'll spill it to you okay, now. Sick. We have this, but
there is some tea on the name of the album. I guess, the guy who came up with the name was like their guitar tech and he ended up suing them.
Really?
It was just like something that they were trying to name the album. And I guess he like overheard someone say it in a ski lodge. Like a woman said it to her kid.
Uh-huh.
And then he thought it was really funny.
That is, I mean,
and they were like, we promised you like, if we use it, we'll give you something. And then they ended up paying him like $500. And then I think a few years later, he was like, I need a little bit more. And I think they ended up settling and giving him like 10 grand or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good finder's fee.
It's a great finder's fee to just make a joke and then be like, use that. But dude,
but also that's not his joke. It was the mom's joke.
Yeah. She should be getting the
10. She should. And the kid.
Yeah.
Do you want to know is the wildest shit in the entire world is I fucking was looking, go into Reddit. I talked to all the people that asked Alan, I asked like all these super fans,
mm-hmm.
ton of shit. I'm like, I want to be the one that says the smart thing, you know, like tell me the things. But the general consensus of the internet was like, oh, dude, I didn't even put the album name together until years later. And I was like, yes, you guys are all really stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I did.
You didn't?
Literally probably like 3 years ago. And then I was like, oh, So I'm a stupid person.
You really didn't?
Yeah.
I knew it immediately.
It's
that's
the
why
first
I,
thing that I...
Yeah. I was like, this is so genius.
In 2001, I was like, you know, fucking little kid. I don't know. I was too innocent.
Enema, I didn't know it was the porn star.
Mm.
That was where I was that's a fair. Little bummed about that I didn't know that, which I should have. I should have.
Wait, so what were you doing in 2000? I think this
2001.
This is the cool part. It's like... Yeah. What did 2001 Dylan look like?
So 2001 Dylan had no idea. He was wearing like Baker and Volcom and all that, and that was all hand me downs from my brother. We were into skating, and he actually for some reason was given more money than me, just like being the older brother,
like weekly,
yeah,
like allowance wise, yeah,
and, yeah, and he probably saved it better than I did. Maybe we made the same amount, but I always bought candy or something like that, and he would always buy, he would go and buy albums. So he had like the Limp Bizkit one, Korn, and then he had Enema of the State, and I remember I would steal that CD all the time, and he would get so pissed and he'd beat the shit out of me and like pin me on the floor and spit in my face. He would do that thing from Big Daddy.
I know that thing.
Yeah, where you have to like move your head. Mm-hmm. So, Take Your Pants Off and Jacket was the first album that I was like, I want to ask my mom and dad for this. So Christmas came around and I asked for a bunch of records. I think Dookie was on there, that, and probably Weezer or something like that. And they did not get me that. They got me a Mariah Carey CD and Hanson. And mm-hmm. they were like, Mbop is such a good song though. And I think it was because of the parental advisory that they were like, we're not getting our kid take your pants off and jacket.
Yeah.
And I was so fucking bummed. And then of course my brother had the CD. So I stole it all the time and just listened to it hours on end.
How much older is he?
He's 3 years older than me. So
yeah,
but way cooler.
This was like Blink was a band for me. It was like, it was that when they started to get, especially this album, this was like made for guys like me.
Yeah.
I just instantly was like, all right, I drive around suburban neighborhoods and hit stuff with, you know, cause minor property damage.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
it's like, that's really who it was made for.
I remember one night getting, me and my friends got really high, and I think one of them had a license, and we just drove into as many trash cans as we could listening to that album and just blasting them out of the way.
I like almost feel bad for.
It's awesome. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's like a universal experience. Like, I feel like I did the same thing.
I almost feel bad for kids growing up now.
Yeah.
That aren't getting, they're like, that's a, like,
their release is Chicken Jockey in the
Actually,
that's
dude,
as far as it goes.
Dude, that was actually, I got to give him credit for that, because there was a fucking article that came out where they were lighting fireworks off in the fucking, and I was like,
dude, Chicken Jockey's like the new Harlem Shake.
It's crazy. It's wild. We came back from, we played some, like, drifting festival.
Wait, that's amazing.
It was cool. It was in South Carolina. It was like all like race car stuff, and then
that's incredible
drifting shit.
But TJ went to the movies during the day, you know, because you don't have shit to do.
Yeah,
and
in South Carolina.
Yeah,
it's like, what am I going to do? I have my AMCA list.
Yeah. Hell yeah,
yeah.
And like, I guess every like 13 to 14-year-old boy was waiting in line to go see this thing that they knew was bad.
They were all just walking in the parking lot yelling Chicken Jockey, and they had like the Minecraft masks that you get from McDonald's. They're just so excited. They're like, Chicken Jockey, Chicken Jockey. And they like see me get out of my rental Kia Soul. They're like, you going to see Minecraft? I'm like, no.
I probably should now.
I kind of want to, though.
We also got targeted there. They threw a bunch of pamphlets, religious pamphlets. Uh-huh. We went into Target to get Starbucks. And they saw TJ and I, because we were doing Bring Me the Horizon.
They did not like your tattoos.
They did not like this.
No.
No.
Which is understandable.
I get it.
Insane there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In South Carolina, for sure.
Most places, even in my neighborhood, until the old ladies
in LA, you
me,
look like the most normal person possible. Are you kidding me?
I didn't shower.
I would ask you for salt.
I didn't shower for this podcast to get in the mode for take off your pants and jacket. I wanted to get back into like teenage me, yeah, you know? Also, by the way, just before we get started.
Yeah.
It's happy birthday, Mr. Beast.
Happy birthday, Mr. Beast. We love you.
It's Mr. Beast's birthday. And I really think that we should just happy birthday, Mr.
Yeah,
Beast.
Yeah, he should have a day.
Thank you for all that you do, Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah, Jimbo. Jimim.
It's Beast Day.
It's Beast Day.
It's a better holiday than like Labor Day.
We're on Beast Mode for you today, Jimmy.
Why are we working?
Okay.
Yeah, right. It should be a national holiday.
It should be.
Yeah. A National Philanthropy Day.
All right.
Kids would actually pay attention to the
album. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Okay.
Yeah, can you give us some stuff?
I'll give you the rundown. Came out June 12th, 2001. Came out on MCA Records. It was produced by Jerry Finn. The album is only 38 minutes long.
Wow.
And it is the first punk rock album to debut at number one on the Billboard 200. It sold 350,000 copies in the first week. It is certified double platinum by May 2002. And over 14 million copies were sold worldwide.
Oh my God. That's a lot.
Huge. They were at the peak. They were the biggest thing out there.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. It's cool. It's awesome. I think they did like the right thing with this album following up Enema. But from what I read, there was starting to be some like tension in the band because Tom wanted to do like more post-hardcore. Mm-hmm. He was getting like more into the emo stuff. And Mark Hoppus was like, let's do another pop punk album. And Jerry Finn, I think, was kind of the guy that like kept the train on the tracks.
Wow,
for this,
really?
From what I read.
We're probably going to have to edit this, but it was also when Travis was, because I think he was like fully transforming into a
worked up white boy.
Like, I think it was like the full circle of like, you know, it was also just like the peak of,
was Famous Stars and Straps around yet?
I don't think so. I think that's when he like started to do it. It's like when he started to have like baggy stuff,
yes,
and then be like, I also like Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
It was like, I think this was the peak of that. And they also experienced like, you know, since coming off of the last album, they're so fucking
yeah.
Say like Travis was getting into hip hop or something, so that we can make this.
Okay. I think this was when Travis. All right, how do we do this?
You're fine. You're
this
just.
Was a, this was when Travis was getting very much into hip hop. I think
other music and other musical styles.
Yeah. Well, one thing. Okay, so I went and saw Mark's
the book thing,
and it was incredible. It was so informative on stuff that I didn't even realize about the band, and something that I never realized about Travis and how of an integral part. Because to me, like, I always listen to guitar and just like really the melodic parts of songs rather than drums. And Mark talks about how when Travis came into the band, it just like completely changed the whole dynamic because he was so into hip hop. He was like an actual like jazz band kid. And now after I listen back to the records, I'm like, holy shit. Like there's stuff that he's doing that no pop punk drummer would ever be like, I'm gonna go and do it. Like you're like, holy shit, yeah, this really was so much of the sauce that went in there.
We did Enema of the State like a couple months ago, and we were talking about how he was just as much of like a it's almost like a lead singer as a drum, like a, yeah. Like it was a main instrument. It's like, you usually think of drums as a background.
Exactly.
This was the first time that I ever thought of drums as you could put them also in the front. Cause he's ultimately like way better.
I mean, there's so much space cause it's just like a three piece. So it's like, it's filling it out. And like the way Mark plays bass, he's talked about it being like, I play kind of more as like a rhythm guitarist and like I taught myself how to play. And I think that it's so unique. Like, to have the drums be such an integral part. I heard they also like, so Jerry Finn spent like 2 days just getting drum sounds.
Wow.
Like just moving the mics around and like making sure it sounded good. And Travis was like, fucking this dude, like, let me just play. But he did a good job.
Yeah, he did a great job.
And then once it was all set up, I guess Travis just went and busted out everything in like 2 days.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long drums take in a studio. Like, it could take 2 days. They could take like 2 months. And somebody would tell me, I'd be like, sure.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Me too.
But it's like, I listened to this interview that he did and he was like, yeah, I just went into the studio or did the drums and then I went home. He's like, and then like the guys are just like
6 months later, the album was done. My part was done in 2 days.
He is just such a beast. Like even watching him now, he just is always practicing. I don't think he ever stops.
Dude, he was just made. He's like one of those guys that was just like made. That's what he was made to do.
Yeah.
It's hard because you don't. You know, with DJs and with guitar players and with singers, you can like name them.
Yeah.
It's like how many drummers in
Josh bands? Josh Dunn is the only other drummer that I think I can name.
Neil Peart.
Does he play drums?
I don't know.
Neil Peart's a good name though.
I know
Neil Peart. I know that name.
I know.
Yeah, he's a drummer.
Okay, Neil Peart. What is he? He's in
Rush. He's like one of the most legendary drummers of all time.
I don't care.
Look at this Rush. Shit.
There you go. Three drummers that I can really, fuck. And then Tommy Lee, I can name as well.
Tommy Lee. Yeah. That's a good one. This is like,
but it's crazy. Cause you have to like really think like for guitarists, you'd be like, all right, Jimi Hendrix, Robert Plant, right. He's the guitarist. Mm-hmm. Tom DeLonge. You could keep going much longer for drummers. I get to three and I'm like, hold on. What else?
We're done. I have Pete the Feet Sandoval only because I know that. Because I haven't played like in metal bands growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Pete the Feet Sandoval. He's from Morbid Angel.
That's a great name.
Pete the Feet. Like allegedly like the fastest at double bass growing up. And you know,
I just Googled Pete the Feet and he's a hippie who went barefoot for 50 years.
So cool.
No, Pete the Feet Sandoval.
Oh.
Like it's his, he was like allegedly at the time. And when you're a little kid,
they were competing.
See, I'm right, right?
Yeah, I don't see the feet. Oh, yeah, okay, on his wiki, yeah.
Yeah, right. He was allegedly, like, at the time, the fastest now. And now I'm like, I listen to, like, dubstep, and I'm like, shit, is actually, I've never really listened to a dubstep song in full.
You know?
I don't think I've ever listened to a full.
Me neither.
like I know parts of them. And
I think
like,
I know the first part of it and that's it.
Yeah.
I know the parts that like we mix.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I'm like, well, I didn't realize there's more of this.
There's a whole second section on this song. That's this different.
More than 15 seconds. I thought every dubstep song was like 15 seconds when we first started doing this show. But no, it's like now I'm listening. You can listen to some of those, like the stage that we played at the EDC Mexico. And it was like metal.
Yeah.
It was like heavier than heavy, any of this yeah. heavy shit.
I feel like it's dubstep and like metal music are very much married right now in terms of like headbanging and like what you do at the show as well.
Definitely.
And even more people have been like doing more like hardcore vocals on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I think of a really fast drummer with the double tap, I think of Mudvayne. I don't know who the drummer of that is, but do you remember that band?
Yeah, dude.
Of course.
They're like, how do we spell this? They were at the time. They were coming up at the time where every band was like, all right, how do we?
Yeah, like trapped.
Yeah.
You just got to like spell it weird. Biscuit.
Yeah.
They're just like, what can we?
How do we do this our way?
And actually, it's so funny that you mentioned that because now I feel like dubstep artists are just catching up with that. And they're like, wait.
Yeah, who is that guy I showed you?
My name's Pied Piper, P-Y-D, P-Y-P-E-R-2.
It's like a good name. It's like if you're a dubstep artist and you're listening to this, you don't have a name.
No, you should name, okay.
And then Dylan can sue you for $10,000.
Yeah, that's my name.
Wait, what were you saying?
No, I was going to say you should name yourself A1.2, and then you're always at the top of the list on every single flyer. Yeah,
like 303 did that. They're like, that was a strategy.
Smart.
Yep.
Really
that's why
smart.
I think I recently heard that's why A1 Steak Sauce is named A1 Steak Sauce.
Shows up at the top. It's pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
How do we...
Blowing minds.
How do we change this? Anyway, back to dude. All right, back to the time when everything was awesome and American Pie was like number one and getting boners kicked ass.
Yep.
And
boner jokes in the music video for one of these songs. At the end, fucking Tom's just sitting there with a huge boner. I thought that was so goddamn funny. And like all the promos that they did for this, I was watching on YouTube, like Mark does like a fake commercial where he's a proctologist and Travis is the patient.
I think I've seen that one. Maybe I
probably
haven't.
It was awesome. It's like in the set of like the old Enema of the State situation. Mm-hmm. Like it looks like it probably was in that set, but it's like
the same doctor's office.
Yeah, it's like the same doctor's office. And which I thought was really cool because they were kind of doing like we do skits. You do skits.
Yeah.
Like everybody that rocks does skits.
I mean, they are the reason why in my career I ever made funny music videos. And it was always because their music videos made me just so happy to watch and like not be taken seriously and just fun. Like First Date is still one of my favorite music videos with the wigs coming down off the slide, which by the way, their pants are still on like the whole time until...
Like there's the consistency.
Consistency was really funny of them like having their pants off at the end of it.
This time was like, they're like, when can we get naked? Like, when can we get naked? Like, cool. Well, when can we take our pants off? And I think it's also like that lends itself to, I think the people like who are our age, it was like they were your friends.
Yeah.
I feel like when I was growing up, like I was friends with Blink without knowing them.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where you're like, I wish I knew these guys because I feel like we would have so much in common to talk about and just make stupid dick jokes.
Yeah. How did they do that? I don't know. They were just like so fucking funny and relatable and likable and charming. Yeah.
But I also think it was just like the at the time it was, I think anyone that was not really into what was happening in pop music, which I think pertains to us, is that skating was getting so big, but it was still underground at the time. And they were so, I feel like the like little sections of pop culture were so much smaller than now. There's so many other subsections of things that you can be into. I feel like for guys, it was like very much, I'm into skating, I'm into punk rock, and I want to mosh, and I want to make fart jokes and have a girlfriend. and jizz.
Yeah, that's everywhere. It. They literally, this was like pure, this was like jizz time.
Yes.
This literally was like jizz time. Like everybody was like, I can do that. And now I can joke about it. Yeah, this was jizz time.
This was.
Everybody.
I mean, that American Pie of him jizzing three times.
Yeah.
In them watching the webcam. So good.
So good. I gotta rewatch that movie.
You know,
so funny.
I did like somewhat of a homework for about you too. Uh-huh. Cause I was like, I have to know Sud. Cause we discovered electronic music exists like 6 months ago, you know? So like
you guys have known it longer than
I
know.
I'm just, barely.
It's okay.
And so I was like, I want to know Sud. I know Dylan is very popular with the, but I wanted, now that I'm like doing this shit, I was like, I watched that interview you did with, they talk about sounds.
Excellent sound.
Yeah. They're really good. I watch them
they're
all the
awesome.
Time.
Yeah.
But
Danny and Parker are the shit.
This is the second podcast that I've heard you talk about jizz on. It's like something about you brings out the jizzing in everybody. Yeah.
I don't know why. It's just so funny.
It's so funny.
Jizzing is just a funny thing.
It's such a weird thing.
It's such a weird thing. I talk about that with my girlfriend too, where I'm like, it's so weird. Like you don't have anything come out of you. I'm just like,
yeah.
I always think about being lighter. Like I think about like, I'm like, I weigh less technically.
Weigh yourself before and after.
Like technically you weigh less.
Yeah. After you jizz, your balls are way, way, way less weight.
Like you technically weigh less.
Yeah.
This also, okay. Back to this album. I think this might be the beginnings. Ready? All right, everybody just hold on.
Okay.
Buckle up. I think this was like the beginnings of like QAnon people.
This album?
Why? I think this was the seed that started.
This is a wild. Okay. A wild.
Okay.
Wild
I'm ready. Guys, well, yeah. Sorry.
Are you guys ready?
We're listening.
Yeah.
The album came out. It had like three separate covers.
Sure.
Like it had three separate covers.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either until this.
Wow.
The red variant, the yellow variant, and the green variant.
Oh, okay.
There was also separate, like secret songs, which by the way, awesome. And I wish we could still do.
I did not know that either.
They had six secret songs, but two were on each album. So.
Wow. That's smart.
Yeah, but the band was pissed about it. Like they were like, you guys are exploiting our fans to try and get them to buy our record three times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Which worked.
Yeah.
Like it did. Like, and this is why it started this. So they were like, all right, why are they using these colors? The G on this album means this. They were like trying to put all these pieces together. And I guess people were tripping out about something called the alphabet theory about their covers. And I looked it up. I was like, what the fuck is this? And just tell me this doesn't sound like the start of these fucking dumbasses trying to put the like puzzle pieces together where there is none.
Yeah.
Alphabet theory is also known as, ready for this? VBN ABCDKIS framework. It's a consumer-based behavior that combines the elements from existing theories like value, belief, norm, and theory, argues that demographic knowledge, information seeking habits, and context influence consuming, affective behavior. Anyway, there are these people trying to figure out like what the colors and numbers and why they put this album with this and this, and even the little letter on the G, I think there's a G on the, am I into this? I know this. Like, am I,
wait, what's
is
the
this
G?
Me? There's like a G on the, or a J, or something on the jacket.
Okay.
There's a little letter.
Yeah.
On the jacket. And so people were like really looking into that with like, what does this mean? With
so this much
color?
Lore. They were creating lore that may not have been there.
Well, it's crazy because they apparently assigned like an icon to each member of the band. And so like the red one is an airplane and that one is assigned to Travis and he's wearing the red shirt with the airplane on it. And this was way before he had his plane crash.
Yeah.
they actually like knew he had a fear of flying before that, and they would like kind of tease him about it. And mm-hmm. that's why they gave him the airplane.
Okay. So,
and then he fucking gets in like one of the worst tragic plane crashes ever.
Okay. So now do you guys understand what I'm saying?
Wait, so then who's green?
I don't know.
Who was blue?
I don't know. I have no idea. I stopped at this and I was like,
you couldn't go further.
I was like, yeah, I don't want it. Cause you know, you reached that threshold where yeah. then you start being crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have the potential to,
I don't know them that personally like that, like to be like, hey, would you ever be, I just don't think that they would be the type of band to be like, yo, let's fucking
They're not.
Put so many different clues. Like they really truly are just the guys that like Mark invented jerking off, you know,
literally that's, invented jacking.
He invented that. He talks about it in his book. He said he invented jerking off and he's happy to give it to the rest of the world. So to say that their album has anything to do with any QAnon stuff or like, okay. not you're saying that, but like for them to go that deep, you're like, wait, you missed the whole thing. This album is about taking your pants off and jerking off.
That's it. I think that is like when I'm like drawing the connections, I think a lot of the kids that were growing up around then were the people that lost their minds and started putting all those things together. And this might have been the first catalyst that started them being like, what's on the dollar bill?
Yeah.
You know, like that looking at shit. So...
Well, just to even take it a step further, that they are not doing this. The two biggest singles they wrote in like 10 minutes each, Rock Show and First Date.
Wow.
At the same time, by the way.
Yeah, like separately. Like Tom went off and wrote First Date and Mark went off and wrote Rock Show. Because their manager sat them down and he was like, guys, like you don't have a single. And he was like, I just need that classic pop punk single. And they were like, all right, fuck you. We'll go do it.
I just need that classic Blink record. You got to give it to daddy.
Dude, has that happened to you? Like,
no, thank God.
Where somebody's like, dude, make us a hit.
We just need that classic DF. Yeah. No, thank God. If someone said that to me, I think I would do the exact opposite. Just because it would sound like it's like my mom and dad coming to me and being like, we need you to do this. And I'm like, fuck you. I'm going to do something exactly opposite of that.
Isn't it inherent? This is the Blink in all of us, by the way.
But they wrote these songs out of spite. Like they were just like, okay, you want that? Like I'll write this fucking stupid ass song about going to a rock show. And then ends up being like their biggest song.
I feel like that always happens.
Yeah.
I feel like that always happens with every band where they're like, well, I'm just going to make this stupid joke song.
Yeah.
Like what's that song? I forgot. She sings it about her label.
It's like Sarah Bareilles.
Espresso.
Yes. Sarah Bareilles.
Love song. I'm not going to write you a love song.
I'm not going to write a love song. And then it became a fucking massive.
Yeah. The label was like, we need you to write us a love song.
Yeah.
And the song is like, I'm not going to write you a love song. Huge hit.
So good. And it's so good.
Spite songs.
Spite songs are great. Actually, you know what?
What?
I'm going to actually hit up my management now and be like, you need to ask me for more things so I can spite you.
Push me.
Push me into hard directions.
Asshole.
Yeah.
It's the, there's a blink. This is the Blink thing in all of us. Anytime I have to do, if I wanted to do something and somebody told me I had to do it, I wouldn't want to do it.
Wait, okay. Actually, I have a good reference. So I made a song called Not Butter a long time ago. And that song is me making a joke record of all the songs that were out at that time that were like Tsunami or, you know, that just had one word and they were saying that. And I was like, what if I made a stupid ass record that said, I can't believe it's not butter. Like, I'm just going to do it. It's funny. And like, even the music video is us poking fun at like the entertainment industry. And it ended up being it was a spite song that ended up being one of the biggest songs at the time for myself.
That rocks.
That like really helped my career.
What do you think that is about those things?
I think maybe because you're creating from such a different, like a different space of like, you're not trying to make a hit. You're not trying to do anything that is like, I'm going to go and try to make money or something like that. And I feel like if you ever try to do that, it always doesn't do that well. And I think if you're creating from the space of, I don't know, I guess spite really just makes you want to do something funny and stupid and cool. And then maybe, and it just works that way.
Dude, that is so funny that you did that. Like that's
I mean, we just did the
it's really funny. I was like actually thinking about like some of the stuff that you've done. Like, we've known each other for a minute.
Yeah.
And I know those like key moments of the things. And I'm like, really like a funny guy.
Thank
like,
you.
And for being like they did the same thing though to draw parallel. Like, some of these songs were there. I mean, all of these songs are like amazing songs.
Yeah.
And then they're doing like dick jokes at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a song in the middle of it about like fucking his grandpa, you know?
Wait, which one is that online?
That's one of the secret songs.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that is?
Yeah. It's awesome. So there is, yeah, it's.
It's about him fucking his grandpa.
They somehow managed to corner, speaking of fucking Mr. Beast Day, they managed to corner the market on like holiday songs.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Like they did Thanksgiving.
Happy Holidays, You Bastard is track number 4.
We'll go to...
That's track number 4?
Yeah.
It's Christmas Eve and... Yeah,
42 seconds.
I was listening to this recently and I'm like, this is such a good song.
It's great.
Hold on.
And I guess Mark was just procrastinating actually wrapping Christmas presents and like, was like, I'm going to write this song. Yeah.
I think the thing that's so amazing about these is that like the songs are so good underneath. And then I think the lyrical content is just so funny and the juxtaposition just makes me so happy.
The juxtaposition, I think, is like part of why it is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like that is, you can blink 182, any 3-syllable word.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like you can just do that. And like, but the way that they do it. And if somebody else did that, you know, maybe it would be great, but since they're doing that and you know it's them,
yeah,
there's like a, it's like it's strange to say that that is beautiful.
Yeah, no, it is. No, it's not strange. It's beautiful because it's beautiful.
It's real, and there's more on the albums. Like I
need to look through this now because I need to listen to those songs.
I had no, you would know some of the bonus songs. Like you would be like, really? Yeah, this was on a compilation or on a friend's mix CD. Cause I knew like half of them, but I had never heard that one until today.
That one's incredible. Dude, the way that it starts. I wish I could have been a wallflower just watching them pitch these songs to like the label execs being like, yeah, we have another record that we did. Take a listen. And they play that. Like, dude, is every executive laughing their ass off?
I
feel
like I saw a TikTok of some kid who, like, some artist who did that, like, as a prank. He's like, I'm walking into Atlantic and playing them, and he was filming them, and it was a song like that, where it was just about,
and he was taking it like seriously.
He was acting like seriously, but like it was a joke. It like the whole thing was like,
oh my god,
acting like this is serious.
That's incredible.
But I feel like they really meant it. It feels authentic and funny. It doesn't feel like they're just doing it like to be a joke. Like they're doing it because they think it's like really fucking funny and it's who they are as people.
Yeah.
Like every time that they fucking open their mouths in any interview or any, even just like the beginning of the banter on First Date, like when he walks into the,
you know, like I was saying, man, yeah. I walk in there, my brother's around and I end up kissing my own brother.
Far out, man.
Like father.
It's so funny. It makes no sense, but it's so goddamn funny. And
I can't listen to their live out, the Mark, Tom, and Travis show, like without. Okay.
Dude, the Satan part in that is so good.
I can't listen
to
Hey,
we're Satan and we're going to fuck your asses.
Boobies. Like, I can't, like, you are too. Like, but I can't, dude, I can't listen to the regular songs.
Without doing the live part, that's so good.
I can't listen to What's My Age Again without saying Where's My Asian Friend. Like it's just there's something that they did.
Yeah. There's times when I'm just like walking around, like doing something in the backyard, and then I just like singing to myself, "Where's my Asian friend?" You know.
Which TJ is also Happy APA Month.
Thank you.
Happy APA Month.
Thank you.
He's 6% Chinese.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, I just found out.
That's sick.
Yeah.
I just got back from China.
How was it?
It was sick.
I got to go.
It's amazing over there. They got LEDs on everything.
Really?
Like on all the freeways. I feel like I'm raving at 24/7 over there.
Did you?
Why are you laughing?
Because TJ did the fucking funniest thing. He like, the fucking absolutely the funniest thing in the entire world. Am I allowed to say that on this?
We can edit it out if you want, but I don't think it's that bad.
So it's not bad because you are Asian. We're partners with like Insomniac, mm-hmm. and we work out of the office, and during APA month, they like set up this thing in the middle of they're like fortune cookies out and just like, you know, happy APA month.
Yeah.
And,
they have a club.
They have a club.
Insomniac AAC, Insomniac Asian American Club.
Oh, wow.
So TJ, I tried to join.
And they said no?
Well, nobody got back to me. They like sent out an email and like, they were like, if you want to join, fill out this form. And I did this like last year. Nobody got back to me.
I'm sorry, man. That's fucked up.
I know.
On May 1st this year, I walked up to like the president, who's like the guy who does marketing. And I was like, what's up, dude? Like, happy AAPI month. And he was like, oh, thanks, man. You're an ally. And I was like, no, actually, like I am Asian. And he was like, really? I was like, yeah, I tried to join the club, but nobody fucking emailed me back.
So,
and he was like, well, okay, if you want to join. I'm like, yes, I absolutely want to join.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So they go.
They thought you were Blink-182ing them.
Yeah, they thought I was just being a dick, but like.
So they go to like Dodgers games and shit. Yeah, it's fucking cool. And they all take a picture. So it's going to be everybody that works at Insomniac and then TJ in the Dodger picture for
April. Look, man.
It's just so fucking funny.
I have the 23andMe to prove it.
I know.
I believe you.
Okay. Back to Blink. Give us some more real things or else I'm going to continuously tell stories.
Okay. Let's get into some of the liner notes and shit.
Yes.
We got Mark, Tom, and Travis, obviously. Jerry Finn. He was once again the fourth member of the band. He also did Green Day's Dookie. He did Sum 41's All Killer No Filler. Did
what a good album.
AFI's Sing the Sorrow.
Everything. This man's Jerry Finn, dude.
Yeah.
That's what we've been hearing.
He just created us, basically.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until we like did this podcast and also started being like, oh, I like music, mm-hmm. and like listening to it and doing what going to school.
Yeah, making music. Yeah. And I know it's crazy to see how much goes into all of that work, you know, because from front facing, you're like, all right, well, it's just these three guys, but it's like, well, hold on. There's another person in the background that's really facilitating a lot of this stuff to be, I mean, even like you were saying, where he's miking up the drum kit. I mean, that's such an important thing to do.
Yeah, I had no idea. Like, I didn't think about it. You know, I was just like, Blink or whatever band I liked.
Yeah.
You know, and that it really is like an amazing, Jerry Finn was, everybody that comes on here has worked with him or knows him is just like literally best guy in the entire world.
So awesome.
I mean, he kept this band together for sure. And then it was mixed by our friend Tom Lord Alge.
Everything.
Oh, nice.
Everything.
I've met Chris.
Is he cool?
He's cool. Yeah, he actually did the record that I made with Brennan Urie.
Really?
Love in the Middle of a Firefight. Yeah. I went to his studio and he was like cutting on tape still. It was so cool to watch.
That's awesome. Because
I'm just in Ableton and it's like, it's such a different process than being on an actual mixing desk.
Where you're like, you're the guy from the plugins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice to legit. Meet you.
I use every one of your plugins.
Yeah, I know.
He's like, yeah.
Thank you for everything.
I know. Everybody does.
Yeah.
This is actually a fun music fact, and it's not about Blink, but it is about Matt Squire. Cause he came in and talked about the Panic episode.
Yeah.
And the beginning of, you know, I Write Sins is just like, okay, we all know what that sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the entire world does. He couldn't listen to it because when they had hired somebody,
I remember this clip.
It's fucking,
I went and listened back and I couldn't even hear it.
The same thing.
I still can't hear what's breathing, right?
I can't fucking hear it either.
No.
It's just gotta be one of those things like that you only know because you know.
This is like the worst thing about being a music producer is those little types of things that can ruin a song for you and not for anybody else.
Are there anything in your
all
songs?
Of like the first original records I was using this kick plugin called Bassism. and I fucking hate how it sounds. Funny. And people always ask me to play the records and I don't play the records because I hate the sound of the kick.
What was it? Like what?
It just
what
is like is the very like
about it.
It's like very. It's on this record, Dildo Noise. It's basically on every single like EP that I ever did before my first album that
you can't just open up the sessions and throw it in.
I don't
kick?
Have the sessions anymore. Damn. This was before I really started realizing how important it was to back up stuff. My computer like basically did the wheel of death and I only got to save like half of the stuff that was recent. So there's some of them, like I still have the Get Low file. I still have, I don't give a fuck or shit. And I don't think I have Dildo Noise anymore as well, but I guess with AI now it's way easier to make stems of everything. So I could That's redo true. Them.
When that happened, I think we look at our like artists that were like this person is always having fun and is in a great mood and is good at this stuff. And like what is that moment like for you when that something terrible happens? Like, what did you do?
Wait,
how did you feel when you're like, oh, all this shit's gone?
Oh my God, dude, I'm trying to think of like what I could equate it to. I don't know. It's like your stomach drops in the worst way possible. Think about being like on a roller coaster and you're going down and your stomach is dropping, but it's dropping because the roller coaster is ending and it's like the track is gone and you're just going to go face plant into the concrete. That's what it feels. Cause you're like all this stuff that I worked on forever, all these presets that I made on Silent, all these things that are my sound are completely gone and I have to remake all of them and just start from scratch. It's the worst. And then rebuilding that library, it just takes so long.
It's a feeling that I was, it hasn't happened to me, obviously.
Oh, thank God.
Like,
it almost happened with our company. Like the other day, some folder disappeared off of Dropbox and we were like, that's the entire creative folder for the whole year. Like, oh, where the God. Fuck is it?
But the way that like,
so you guys know that feeling. Cause exactly it. There you go.
It's like the way
oh, fuck. I just hurt.
Yeah.
The way that like, I have tried to explain it is like, if you've been dating somebody for, it's going great, 3 years, everything's awesome, no signs of problem, nothing.
They stop talking to you immediately.
You just drive, you're driving next to them, and they look at you and they go, we are breaking up.
Yeah. That's a really good comparison. Cause that is that stomach drop of like, what the fuck did I just do?
It's a real, like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just wanted to know that. I wanted to know. Cause I look, you know, there's some artists, honestly, even like Blink, I can't really see them like being in a horrible mood.
Yeah.
I can't see them like any,
but we know that they were,
we know that they here. When Mark first came to, Emo Night, this was like right when we started.
It was literally like our second or third show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was still drinking, which.
How long have you been sober now?
This time, like two years. And then I had like 5, 6.
3 years, baby. Let's go. Dude. Let's go.
Are you doing the deal like you did? Nah, you just.
Just do it. Just. I love Friends of Bill, but it's Bill, right?
Yeah.
I've done
Dr. Bob's nightmare.
That's actually where I met. So really oddly enough, that's where I met DJ AM. Cause my friend Eamon, I got a DUI when I was 18.
You have to.
Yeah.
Like there's, it's
well,
like,
I was 0.08, but I was
right on the,
I was at the legal limit, but I was 18. Mm. So they were like, you're fucked. So I went to AA just cause
they
made me.
Yeah, they make you.
And my friend Eamon was my sponsor, and then he was sponsored by DJ AM. And then Travis knew AM really well, so we all kind of became friends, and we would like eat up the street on Robertson. I think there's one that's at the Cedar Sinai that we used to go to a bunch. And then there's Log Cabin on Robertson.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that's the whole thing.
That from Bill is like how I met a lot of those people. Which is crazy.
It is crazy because we're like in a space where it looks like the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, it like really like looks like the opposite. How come you stopped doing everything?
I just stopped because I was drinking and not like I would wake up and just be so hungover and it would be debilitating for like 3 days. and I get nothing done. And I just felt like it just wasn't servicing my life anymore. And I was like, it was New Year's. Me and my girlfriend did two shots, woke up the next day and we're like, I feel like I just drank a whole bottle of tequila. And I didn't even get to like that youthful drunk where you're like having a great time. So we're like, let's just stop and see how long. And then 6 months turned into a year, year turned into two turned into three. And then I was like, I don't ever see myself drinking again.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did she stop too?
She stopped as well. Yeah. She's a little bit behind me. She, I think like 3 months or something like that.
Okay. Here we go. Right. Like this is, I think this will be helpful. There's some people that like watch this, that do music or in bands and really like, you know, I'm pretty open about it.
Uh-huh.
I get a lot of like side DMs being like, I got one yesterday that was like, hey, how do you do the stuff you do
and not drink?
Yeah. And you know, I'm so used to it at this point that it's hard for me to be like, all right, this is like what I do. And really for me, it's just like doing it and getting through it and being like, but what about you?
That's exactly what I would say is like, the more you do what you need to do, the more it becomes just normal. Like that is another reason why I didn't want to drink anymore was each time I DJed, I felt myself getting better and better. And I had noticed this before because I'd taken stints of like not drinking for 6 months. And each time I would drink that night, the next night I'd be like, fuck, I want to drink because I have so much anxiety. And I feel like I'm going to be better on the mic if I do that or do this or do this. And from not drinking now for 3 years, I feel way more comfortable on stage just because I've been doing it for so long. I think I'm better at the mic now, just being sober and you build that muscle towards it. And I think it's the same thing. Like if you need to go and I don't know if said person's like, I want to be going to clubs, but I feel too much anxiety. It's like, you got to just push yourself to go and do it. And then as you keep doing it, you're going to start getting that feeling of like being free from yourself. And you know, there's always going to be that weird feeling in the back of your mind. But once you start doing it, then you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
I don't even think about it anymore. And yeah. I remember when I first stopped, I was like, it's all I could think about.
Yeah.
Now I don't even think about it until somebody's like, do you want to drink? And I was like, oh no, I don't. Oh wait, it doesn't even cross my mind. And like to somebody who like, that's all they thought about.
Yeah.
To be like, I don't think about it. It's a wild thing. So anybody that's watching, you're watching people that do it. You can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it.
So, Dylan,
yeah,
your new project that you've been working on.
That is a great segue.
Great segue.
I'm like, let's get off the sobriety. Let's talk about music.
TJ's boring.
Come on, I need a fucking drink now.
We got one in there.
Yeah, I could just go grab a Modelo. You said the new project that you've been working on, it's kind of like a lot of pop punk leaning stuff. At least like I saw some TikToks of you talking about it. I know you put out one song with Water Park so far. Tell us a little bit about what's happening in the world of Dylan Francis creatively and where you're at.
Recently. So the guy that I'm working on the project with for this group, Sorry, My Love, we met 3 years ago and, my friend Anthony, who actually used to tour with me like for 10 years, he was like, hey, you got to meet this guy, Albert. He's awesome. He does a bunch of reggaeton and you're going to love working with him. So we got in touch. We went into the studio, started working, and Anthony came by and he was like, hey man, have you played him any of your pop punk stuff? Like Dylan loves all that stuff. He's friends with a lot of the people. Like you should play him a couple records or something like that. And he's like, okay, I will. So he played me this record that was like the most inspiring thing I've ever heard, which it basically has this like build up where it feels like it's about to go into pop punk and then goes into reggaeton. And at the end, there's like a crazy My Chemical Romance style breakdown of this reggaeton song. And I was like, dude, this is the fucking coolest thing I've ever heard. I've never heard a Latin person on a pop punk sounding style song this way. Like, and maybe I don't know that much pop punk music from Mexico or from South America, but when I heard that, I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever heard. So as I was telling you guys before, I'd been working on a pop punk project during COVID and it just never kind of came to fruition, but I was working with Nothing Nowhere, Meet Me at the Altar, All Time Low. And so I hit him up the next day and I was like, dude, I have a bunch of these songs that we can work on and I can contact a bunch of people that I know. And I'd love to like do this project with you together. And he was like, absolutely. So now 3 years later, we're basically finishing up the album. And one of the records that I got was with Mark, which took 5 years
wow
to happen, but we finally did it. And it was like, the coolest thing ever, of course, just being such a massive fan of Mark and the whole band. And then we have a bunch of other collaborations. As I said, Nothing Nowhere. We got one with Michael Clifford. We're getting one with Alvaro Diaz, who's this incredible artist from Puerto Rico. And, funny enough, I had a studio right next to his, like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And now he's like playing arenas in Puerto Rico and South America. So we're like, the whole project is trying to get all these like really fun, awesome people that we looked up to and all these incredible Latin artists to kind of basically like collaborate together and make this like new sounding, I guess not new sounding, cause we're not reinventing the wheel, but just like trying to evolve it and inspire kids that, you know, would have never thought of like hearing a Latin person on a pop punk song.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting because it's sick as fuck. I was stoked. Grant, this is, I don't know. We're having like this type of journey.
Yeah.
Where like, you're like, I like that now. And I'm like, I like this now, you know, it's like a very similar, like, I mean, not similar. Cause like you are a real person.
You're a real person too.
I just find it interesting. And I like, you know, I've talked to a lot of like DJs and producers that are strictly like in electronic. Mm-hmm. They don't venture but they love this. Mm-hmm. They love pop punk. They love emo, alternative and metal. Some of their favorite, they're like, my favorite albums are the ones that we talk about here.
Yeah.
And then I'll like go and listen to the first 30 seconds of their song and be like, this is not like, this is just so far removed from that.
Yeah.
And why do you think that is sort of the common thread with, at least in, I don't know, might not be your experience, but I've found that all these DJs and producers love this stuff, but end up not making this.
Hold on. I need to understand like in terms of not being able to make the music.
Like they don't make rock or alternative or emo music. They're just like,
I've thought about that too. Like, I don't know if it's that it just hasn't, I feel like it hasn't just been done the right way yet. Cause either it sounds too like, I don't know. Is the right word like church anthem-y ish? Cause it just sounds too big. I don't know, but I've noticed that like anytime that I've wanted to hear like a pop punk song in dance music, it's never been right. I think the closest thing that I've ever heard is like the Artemis song. I Like the Way You Kiss Me. Cause it's like, holy shit, this is a full on sort of techno ish record. That is a post-punk song, like perfectly done, where I've never thought to meld those two together. And when he did that, I was like, this is so cool. And I just feel like there still is that opening for someone to come in and like, be like, all right, cool. I know how to make this dance music of pop punk. I don't know how to do it. That's why I'm like, most of the records on the album are like straight up trying, like we're just producing them as if they were pop punk records.
It's cool that you are doing this because it sounds like you are having fun. And I think I didn't know, I heard it before I saw all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yes, yeah, I like, because I think it translates. Like when you're making stuff that you like want to make, regardless of, I don't know, it's like when somebody's trying to tell you to do something,
yeah,
and it might sound exactly how they're trying to tell you to do, if for some reason it translates that you're having a good time in the music without me knowing.
I mean, that's really a big thing was that I got to a wall with dance music where I felt like I wasn't giving anything to the dance community whatsoever that was like cool or interesting or fun or new. And when I heard the stuff that Albert was working on, I was like, this, I feel like I can totally like give a lot to this. And I feel like I it won't sound like I'm just trying to make, you know, I don't know, the same version of Blink-182 or the same version of Sum 41 or anything like that. I feel like it's going to be completely our own type of thing. And no band's going to be like, that's, you know, that's what we already did that.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where it was just so fun and inspiring, where it was like, that's all that any music producer is trying to find when they're working, is just trying to find a new way of creating something that's already been done before. Cause everything's already been done
right
forever.
And I think that that's also kind of why, before I knew you were doing it and I heard it and I was like, I like this, is because the reason why you're, you know, we even were like, let's have Dylan talk about an album that he had nothing to do with is like just a fan in general of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like, it really shine, it like shines through, and I don't know, it's something you can't like buy or,
yeah,
you just have to kind of be that thing.
Oh dude, I love, I mean, dude, growing up, I remember when the Panic album came out, I had to listen to it by myself, cause my friends would make fun of me, cause they were like all into Black Flag,
yeah,
and Rancid, and like, it was not cool to listen to I Write Sins, Not Tragedies. And, but funny enough, a year later, that's like when it became not cliche to listen to. And all those dudes that listened to Black Flag and Anti-Flag were like, dude, I fucking love this song. I'm like, dude, you would have punched me, yeah, so fucking hard in the face if I listened to this next, yeah, to you.
Were they 2 years older than you?
No, and they were my age.
Dude, really? That was my, yeah, nickname in high school when people were fucking bullying me, was Panic.
No way.
Yeah, they would just be like, okay, Panic, and like push me into a, dude, locker.
I mean, it was, it's funny. It was not a cool genre to, no, listen to in high school.
Yeah.
I remember there was this girl that listened to The Used, and we would go off to lunch and we would listen to The Used together. Like, it was, it's really funny that I had to like, really like
do it in secret,
do it in secret. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I mean, it wasn't cool when we started it in 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys paved the way. For, it was like, no, I mean, it like, seriously, I remember when I heard about you guys doing Emo Night, I was like, that's so fucking cool, because of how much I love the music. I fucking like, genuinely, it's one of my favorite genres ever. And it's what I go and listen to in the car now. Like, before it was, I would just listen to bossa nova music, but now I've gotten like fully back into all the old albums that I was listening to. And like, even like the old, like indie rock stuff, like Death Cab, of course. And like, what is it? The Unicorns. And I was just so into all that type of music. So
that was my poorly worded question, like earlier, I was like, what am I saying while I was saying it? It was just like, there are a lot of DJs, basically, it was just like a lot of DJs and producers that are in dance that strictly like listen to this.
Yeah.
And what they play is completely different.
Yeah.
And I was just, that's why I was like, have you noticed that trend? Cause I'm talking to a lot of these fucking people, then they want to go to Emo Night. And I'm like, you're playing arenas.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very strange dynamic. And I'm like, is it just because you suck ass at guitar and are awesome at computer? You know, like, is that,
I mean, I suck ass at guitar and I'm awesome at computer.
You are awesome at computer.
Yeah. Yeah. Contact
guitar.
Do you
think that that's like what it, a little bit of it, you're like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Do you think that that might be a little bit of it?
Yeah, for sure. I think I mean that my Albert, the guy that I work on the project with, like fully made me realize that I could make this style of music, which I never thought that I could. So I think that that is a big part of it, of like knowing that I had the tools right in front of me. I just never realized that I could do it.
What were some of the things that he showed you?
I mean, one was the drums. Like, I didn't realize that you can just program all of that and it sounds great. Like, and then all of our drums are programmed.
Are they?
Yeah.
I really thought that somebody was playing them.
No, that's like,
I like really thought somebody, yeah, was playing them.
No. In the song Forget with Water Parks, that is like fully programmed drums. So that was a big eye opening of like, holy shit. I mean, that's always, you know, you're like, fuck, I have to, like, I can make the song, I have to go get a drummer. It is tough to make those. It is such a different brain though, for making those drums, like the fills and everything. So you have to really like spend way more time thinking about them as like a prominent part of the song, rather than just like, all right, cool, I'm gonna have the background of just going boom, da, boom, da, boom, da, because then it just gets, you know, it gets old pretty fast.
I think that is another thing, that you grew up with this and that's like in you and ingrained in you. And at least now for me, being like starting this electronic journey, everybody's starting with drums.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like, yeah, just make a drum beat 140.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite. I'm like, I would do drums last, you know, like, it's like, I would, isn't the Like it's completely reverse. Yeah, like
engineered. You write the song on an acoustic guitar and then figure out how to play it with the band. Exactly. Right?
Yeah, actually, I'm really good friends with Nick Long, and there's a song Bad News on their new album, the Blink album. And I told him, I was like, dude, I fucking love that song so much. He's like, oh, dude, you want to hear the acoustic version? And I was like, absolutely, please send it to me. And it is so fucking cool to hear the acoustic version to the like real version, because it's so different from like all the fills, all how the guitar sounds and everything like that. And yeah, it is really funny that in dance music, because the kick is like the most important part of the song. So if you can get a really good sounding kick and snare, then
you're just like layering.
Yeah, then you're like layering everything else. And making sure you're side chaining it.
I just never understood this. It was just completely the opposite way that I thought about how songs were written. And so that's why I'm having this like epiphany of being like, I'm looking at music differently.
Yeah.
And I just, I think when I hear an electronic song, I would like Travis Barker fill there. You know what I mean? Where it's not, I was just, that's what I grew up with.
And that's what you need to put in your music, because that's what's going to make you different from everybody else.
They're not called songs. They're called IDs.
On your IDs.
Dude. I know I'm wrong. We're wrong. We just found out. Literally, like I said. Found out it exists. Dude. I mean, so what is happening? Cause you have the song out. And you also, I had fucking coffee with Austin like 3 weeks before this.
Yeah, we
came
saw you
out
at the Blood Brothers show too.
Which, by the way,
incredible.
Best show I saw in 24.
Oh, I was so happy to be back at that show. I went in the pit.
It was also amazing to see you there.
Yeah. Cause
it really was. Cause you know, I think there are a lot of like DJs and producers that will be like, wear an Anthrax shirt and be like, I'm a rock guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, Dylan was at the Blood Brothers. Like,
he's a real one.
Dude, yeah. I love the Blood Brothers. My funny story about seeing them for the first time. There was this girl that I was into. Well, there's this girl that I saw that I told my friend Dean. I was like, dude, she's so hot. Like, can you hook me up with her? And he's like, oh yeah, she's into the Blood Brothers. I'm actually going to go to a show with her. Do you want to come with us? And I was like, cool. Who are the Blood Brothers? He's like, oh, I'll play you one of their songs. Pulled up Ambulance Versus Ambulance. And I was like, cool. I can get down with it. Went to the show. 5 minutes into the show, Dean is making out with this girl immediately. And I'm like, cool. Damn, I'm just the third wheel at this Blood Brothers show. And I don't even know this band. Watch them play. I was in the pit. Dude, Cecilia Silhouette Saloon came on. I was like, what the fuck? And I went and ended up, like, I went to every show that they ever had after that. It was like the El Rey twice and the Troubadour. And there was another one, I think the Henry Fonda. And it was, did they play the Henry Fonda? I forgot. But I know that it was like, it was so much fun to watch them and just like their stage presence. And I mean, I bought a Nord Electro 3 because of them. Because of that Peacocks and Skeletons song.
Really?
Yes.
Like that, that's what, when? Like when in
this
your...
was when I, so I was like, if I ever get successful in my music career, I'm buying the Nord Electro 3, because I remember seeing them on stage with it and seeing them play. Dun, 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 dun. And I bought it and I never even found that preset on there. And I don't even think I ended up using it, but I just thought it was just such a beautiful piano that I was like, cool, I'm going to keep this in my studio.
What that's, so I, extent of electronic music was thinking that the synth in the Get Up Kids was like, there was like a, like in the first Get Up Kids song, it's just like a, it's probably just like an old Moog. I don't know how to say it still. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that was the extent of,
that's,
I was like,
so funny.
That's electronic music.
I mean, even in Panic, they have a ton of electronic stuff, which I think
didn't
is
even
so
put
cool
that together when I was listening to it. Right. Like I just didn't.
Yeah, like that for the first half of Sins is like electronic, right?
Yeah, so many electronic breakdowns.
They were really, like, I mean, I guess
Fruity
looking
Loops.
Back, they
dude,
were...
he's so good. Even Death of a Bachelor is Brendan, like, doing the like, wonky little...
Yeah. When Matt Squire came in here, he was just like, that guy's, like, fucking Michael Jordan of music. Like, he's crazy.
Every time I see him, I'm like, it's not fair.
Yeah.
You can do everything. You can hit the highest notes ever. You can play piano. Mm-hmm. You can do backflips. It's not fair.
Yeah, I don't want that. It makes me mad.
Got
no,
that
you
Benson
want to know
Boone in him.
Dude, he does.
TJ, okay. So
Brandon did do a backflip at one of my shows in Reading and Leeds and fell.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's going to happen to Benson soon.
Dude, his flips are wild.
Yeah.
The like sideways. Yeah, I'm scared. I'm scared for his knees. And
yeah.
You've seen these Benson Boone flips, right?
Yeah. Yes, I have. And I, yeah, I have. I have seen them.
And you love him.
I think he's really great. I think it's really good. I think he's really good at stuff.
I feel like we got it. We should wrap it up.
Okay. So what can you tell us, like, what, just a little bit about Sorry My Love, like what is next? What's coming up? What do you have planned?
So we have, this new song that basically like started the whole project called Bendito, which is with, Lee Bryan, Ian Dior and Kea. So two Latin artists and one, English. And actually, Ian speaks Spanish on one of the hooks, and people don't know this, but he's Puerto Rican as well. And Albert's Puerto Rican, so we're very Puerto Rican prideful.
Yeah, we wanted we wanted to get Albert on here, but it's like such a fucking.
I know. We wanted to put him on Zoom. We'll put a picture somewhere.
Yeah,
just him smiling just every time we mention him.
Literally right here the entire time. Just a picture right there, and put a microphone. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, we have that coming out, and then the next song we have is with Nothing Nowhere, who's Joe's incredible. You guys had him on the pod, and he's just. I told him this too. I was like, dude, you're such a savant. Holy crap. Can you just play everything? He can play drums. He can play guitar. He can sing. He can sing so high as well. So he's the next one after that. And then I probably shouldn't say the next ones cause we sell the finish records.
We can bleep it out.
Yeah. We can bleep it. I mean, then I'm hoping the next one is with Mark and Alvaro Diaz. And then that's when we should have our album announced and then couple other records before that, and then that'll be coming out, and then more and more and more. We've just been working on a ton, so it's been so fun. It's been like the most refreshing thing ever, and it's like just brings so much joy to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's how you know it's gonna be good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean if all I care about, and I tried to explain this and on like a call with YouTube one time, and I don't know if they got it, but maybe you guys will, but do you ever remember listening to the Blink stuff and you're just, or any of the pop punk stuff you're listening to, and you're just looking out the window as a kid and you were just like, these songs make so much sense to me and how much whatever I'm going through, even though as a kid, you're not going through a lot. I just remember listening to all those albums and just being like, fuck, they get me.
Well, I mean, this album has Stay Together for the Kids on it. Yeah. Where you're just like, how many like children of divorce listen to this on the school bus being like, God damn.
Exactly.
That's me.
That whole, like just listening to all their music always gave me that feeling when I was just getting driven to school. I would put my CD player on and just listen to it and look out the window and be like, cool. At least people feel the same way as I do.
And that's what this is doing.
And that's what that's what I'm hoping that this does for whoever is younger that's listening to, or whoever just, you know, like just listening to the songs and be like, fuck, this really makes sense to me.
Just in general, I think it's cool and admirable that you're in a place in your career where you can go, I'm having fun and this is what I love to do. And I'm going to do this thing.
Hell yeah.
It's hard. Cause there are people that won't be able to, they're going to have to stick to like the thing that they know.
Yeah.
And I just think that I think it's really cool. And even though we're on opposite paths right now.
Well, I mean, a big part of this is to hopefully like figure out that bridge that I feel like will be like whatever the emo dance is, where it doesn't feel like it's just like a house record with someone being angsty on it that right. I feel like could just be like, oh, that's a house song. You know, I want it to really like, when I do try to make that again, like that Artemis thing, that's like a good tent pole where I'm like, fuck. You did something so fucking cool and original.
It's really good.
Yeah. That was like the number one played song at EDC last year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw that on TikTok, because it was like one of those things that just flashed in, you know, as you're scrolling through that. I stopped immediately and I was like, this is fucking incredible.
Does that stuff bum you out? Because it's like, in theory, kind of simple.
Yes.
Right? Like in that.
But that's how it always is.
Right?
It always, like, even when I heard, A Crazes, Do It To It, you know, that record is just so simple. It's just really good drums. And then the vocal, that Chic vocal, right? I think that's the band. You know what song I'm talking about?
No, I literally have no clue what you're saying.
Hold on. He'll pull it up. You've heard this everywhere. Bounce with it, jump with it.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, Ciara. Is it Ciara?
No, that's
Cherish.
Cherish. That's what it is. Not Cheek. Sorry. So yeah, that record with Cherish, and you're like, it's so simple and it's so fucking good. And I remember hearing, I also saw that on TikTok as well. Funny enough, I feel like that's where I find most of my music now, but I remember seeing like a random video and then it got taken down. I think someone played it by accident and wasn't supposed to. And then one of my friends ended up getting the promo for it. And that record, I was like, this is going to change dance music again. Cause it's just,
that's
one of those. And it did, like, now every record right now is like, can we find an old vocal that's really good and put it on a house beat and hopefully it's good. I don't like dance music right now, cause it is very much in like its movie era, where like movies right now are like, all right, what are we going to do? Well, let's go get some old IP and we'll just remake the movie Home Alone. Mm. Let's do, I don't know if Home Alone's being remade.
Where they're just like,
they're just only taking old IP and they're not making remakes, new stuff.
Lion King live action.
Exactly.
It's fucking crazy because just have another idea.
Yes.
Like, I just want to be like, we don't need a number 7 of something. just one different idea.
Exactly.
One thing, you guys.
That's where I feel dance music is right now. And I feel like it'll move from that. But yeah, I mean, we are in like a very weird nostalgic thing. And I guess you could say that that I shouldn't be saying this because I'm making pop punk stuff and it's already been done. But, you know, I'm hopefully trying to do it in a different way.
I saw a TikTok that was like, it was a TikTok showing like, Justin Bieber, like the Jack U whole situation. And it was like, this is dance music in like 2015. Yeah. And then it was like dance music. Now you call the Stephanie, I call the Stephanie.
The thing is, I just,
it's crazy.
It's like, how did we go from that to this?
I don't know.
I'm like,
I miss that. Also, that was the craziest era of like Justin Bieber, like re-blowing up again from that whole Jack U awesome. Project.
Yeah.
It's really, I saw this, you know, he's like kind of spazzing a little bit right now.
Yeah.
I saw a tweet where it was like under producer, like Twitter. Cause like, that's like now all of my algorithms are like, Twitter. It's literally just like EQ jokes, you know, like where like I could show it to anybody else and they'd be like, okay.
What does that mean?
But it was like, he had managed to take I don't know what, probably maybe like Fruity Loops you were saying, but it like the EQ is just, it's all EQ'd and all of the producers were like, I didn't even know you could do that.
Wait,
it was like if you were, you know, you're like do a bump, like in it, it's like the entire thing is,
oh yeah, you can push up the entire thing.
All these producers were just like, that's, I didn't even know you could, didn't even know Justin Bieber was, you could do this. So it was like that, but that's where my algorithm is at right now, which is wild. And I never thought I would say, I just didn't think I could do any of this stuff.
Dude, you got it.
I really love it. And then it's interesting that you say that, like about dance music, because I'm at a place where I'm like finding it, I guess. And so I think all of it is really interesting because I haven't heard it before.
Yeah.
I'm listening to it with like a new set of ears.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I think that is most people. And that's like most people that are listening to all this music right now have not ever heard it as well. And that's where I'm like an old geezer where I'm like, I've heard this before.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's fucking sick with what you're doing is because, you know, the people that are Dylan Fance's friends and dance fans and of electronic music, you know, you might bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Like you might bridge that gap. And I think that that's kind of the important thing about music in general.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, it's like we can talk about styles and all this shit all you want. But at the end of the day right now, especially where we are in the world, I think you can be kind of a fan of everything.
For sure.
And really be a fan of everything. And so I think that you, with this project especially, has the potential to do that for a lot of, you know, kids, but people too.
Thank you. I hope so.
I think
it means a lot.
I think so. Like, I think you have, if anybody can do it, you can do it.
I appreciate that.
All right, dude. Well, thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for coming and hanging out in my garage.
Thanks for having me, guys. I love you guys.
Love you too, man. And keep us posted. Keep sending us fucking tunes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I want to come and play emo night too.
Please do.
Please.
That would be
We have a new show called Grave Rave.
I've seen it. Yeah, yeah.
It's been fucking popping off.
Looks amazing. I saw the recent one was at, what's it called?
We do it like what was the venue? Academy and Exchange, yeah, Exchange every other month. But the Exchange one's like, I was like, oh, this is like a line like Emo Night used to have.
That's fucking awesome.
It's cool.
And it's kind of what I was saying. It was like all the DJs there like emo, yeah, and yeah, metal and pop. And I'm just like, when I listen to that, I'm like,
yeah, I'm like, Flostradamus, you like fucking emo and pop punk?
Yeah, dude. I feel like everyone secretly, like, I feel like even during that time, everyone secretly was going and listening to pop punk and yeah, nobody knew it.
Yeah.
We were just the ones getting made fun of.
We were the ones getting made fun of for it. Yeah. And we were just listening to it out in public.
And here we are now.
Yeah.
We have a garage with the podcast.
Let's go. All right.
Fuck you.
All right. Wait, thank you guys. Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan. Guys.
That was awesome.
That was a fun one. I think that was our funniest one.
I can't wait
by far.